lovely to be back. I have to say, I am actually really enjoying coming and speaking at Bowery. So thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Did you?
I mean, I do go and speak at different places, and it's quite rare to have I've had such a warm welcome and been made to feel so welcome. And there is cake and really good coffee when you turn up here. I mean that is reason enough. Who brought the cake this morning?
Oh, well, I did. It was left over from
something. Well done, Joe. I mean...
Yes,
okay. Well done, Dee. Well done. It is very much appreciated. Now, the question in your mind, am I coming here for the cake and coffee or for the fellowship? I do like cake and coffee. There we go. And thank you so much to Alan as well, Jane, for producing this. This is brilliant. I thought this was a wonderful document. And we didn't get time last week to talk properly about weighing things up, but it is vitally important to embed that, as we bring words and things. So thank you to Alan for producing it. It's very, very helpful. I am going to talk today about, we're carrying on our series on eagerly desiring. So we've had a look at eagerly desiring God to start with. We've had a look at eagerly desiring spiritual gifts. Today we are going to look at eagerly desiring wisdom, which is an interesting one. Always right. And we're going to be jumping around a bit. Rob has very kindly agreed to be on the trigger finger, jumping around on the verses. So we're going to test Rob's keyboard skills this morning. One thing wisdom is not is still preparing your notes at 10 o'clock the night before the delivery and then sending Rob an email saying, is there any chance we could have these on the screen? That is not an example of wisdom. But the Bible does have a lot of... Speaking of a Bible, I do not have one. Do you mind? Can I steal this one here? Thank you very much. You might need one of these. So I have been excited about this one. Why don't we start in Proverbs? We'll be spending some time in Proverbs. So why don't we start there? In chapter 4, verses 1 to 9. Weird, it seems to have disappeared. It's behind me. That'd be easier, Rob, wouldn't it? I have found Proverbs now. It was hiding. Proverbs chapter 4. So listen, my sons, to a father's instruction. Pay attention and gain understanding. I give you sound learning, so do not forsake my teaching. For I too was a son to my father, still tender and cherished by my mother. Then he taught me and he said to me, take hold of my words with all your heart. Keep my commands and you will live. Get wisdom. Get understanding. Do not forget my words or turn away from them. Do not forsake wisdom and she will protect you. Love her and she will watch over you. The beginning of wisdom is this. Get wisdom. Though it costs you all you have, get understanding. Cherish her, and she will exalt you. Embrace her, and she will honour you. She will give you a garland to grace your head and present you with a glorious crown. Amen. Thank you very much, Rob. Now, we're going to compare that. Can we also have 1 Corinthians chapter 3? 18 to 20, we're going to read these verses at the same time and we'll sort of compare them. Do not deceive yourselves. If any of you think you are wise by the standards of this age, anybody here think they're wise? you should become fools so that you may become wise. For the wisdom of this world is foolishness in God's sight. As it is written, he catches the wise in their craftiness. And again, the Lord knows that the thoughts of the wise are futile. Now, Proverbs has got a bit of a strange definition of wisdom, hasn't it? Did you see that as we went through? I heard some of you giggling. That actually the definition of wisdom is to get wisdom, which is quite a hard one to get your head around, isn't it? So I would quite like wisdom. So God, what is wisdom? Well, actually, wisdom is to get wisdom. Oh, okay, I'll do that then. So what do I get? Well, actually, you have to get wisdom. So you feel like you're going around in a bit of a circle, don't you? Like, oh, I need to get wisdom in order to get wisdom. So I should do that. So it sounds a bit confusing, but actually, it's talking about a mindset, isn't it? A way of approaching life to say the most important thing you can set yourself to is to become wise. And it doesn't say what that is necessarily there, but it's saying that a wise person will try to get wisdom in everything they do, in every area of their life, and to learn things from the Word, from God, from worship, from other people, and from all the things, from work. When we do these things, our mindset is to gain wisdom. And to recognise, it's about recognising that maybe we don't actually know everything that's going on. And wisdom is about that recognition that perhaps I don't understand things as fully as I think I do. And so perhaps this person over here who's got a different opinion to me, maybe they've got something that I need to learn about. And maybe that person with a different opinion, actually, they can learn something from me. We recognise that we do not have all the answers, and that only God is the one who has all the answers. So wisdom is really about a mindset that says, actually, I don't know everything, but God is able to teach me. And I've been thinking about this, and this has actually been going on in my head for quite a few months. Often when we get to, this is one example of how that works out. Often when we get to difficult situations, you know, if there's problems at work or stresses at work, you know, often I'm the guy on the phone, you know, when something goes wrong, I'm the guy who gets the phone call saying from a client saying, this has gone wrong, we need to sort it out yesterday. And it can be a little bit stressful. And often I've been in the habit of saying, you know, when this happens, you feel the stress and your prayer is, oh God, please, will you just take this away from me? Can you just, you know, it's like a little toddler, really, isn't it? You say, oh God, just take the pain away and make it go away. But actually, I felt challenged about that, and I've changed my prayer now that when something goes wrong, actually my prayer is, God, Can I learn from this experience? Can you train me? Can I grow? That's the key thing. Can I grow from this? So that the next time something goes wrong, these feelings of stress and whatever it might be, I will learn and think, oh, actually, God got me through that the last 10 times. And do you think maybe we should do something about the software, don't you? There we go. The last 10 times it's happened, and actually I have grown as a person, and I know that God is there again, and my approach to it will be different because my prayer has been, God, teach me and let me grow from this experience rather than take it away, let it go. And that verse in 1 Corinthians as well, it recognises that we have to become foolish to get wise, don't we? Which again is a really weird thing to say. I don't think it's saying it's a good idea to go out and do foolish things, like walk in front of a bus or, I don't know, whatever else it might be, jump off a cliff or something, just so that we can get wise. That's not saying go and be deliberately stupid just to get wisdom. But again, it's a recognition that actually the knowledge in our head, the earthly wisdom that we have, is actually unable to lead us to God. It's not enough. We can't rely on the wisdom in our heads to get to God. And the Greeks had this problem when Paul is writing, because the Greeks couldn't accept the cross. They thought it was foolishness, didn't they? Do you remember that verse in the Bible? The cross is foolishness to the Greeks. And the reason was because they saw it as weakness. They saw the cross as a weak thing in their thinking, in their reasoning. How could a God possibly be crucified on a cross? Surely that's just ridiculous. That's weakness. And their earthly wisdom prevented them from having God revealed to them because it was their blockage. They had to recognize that their thinking was foolishness and get rid of their thinking so that they could replace it with the wisdom of God. Does that make sense? So we recognize that we have to get rid of our cultural thinking. I don't think we realize how much we are brainwashed by earthly thinking, do we? You know, we're trained in school and we're brainwashed by TV. I think I've said this previously, and all the things we read, and there is a constant bombardment of earthly wisdom in our heads that stops us from thinking in godly ways, that stops us from operating in godly wisdom, because our heads are so chock full with earthly wisdom that there's no room for the godly stuff. God has to rewire our brains by saying, get rid of all of that, become foolish, start again, and let me fill you with wisdom through his Spirit. So how do we get it? How do we get wisdom? Well, it appears to be quite simple. According to James chapter 1, verse 5, I actually can't remember what verses I've given you, Rob, so if it comes up on the screen, that'd be amazing. Here we are. So this seems quite simple, doesn't it? If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. So that seems quite a simple thing, doesn't it? We just have to ask, and it'll be given. Now, I think we should define this a little bit better. I don't think this means that if I ask God for wisdom, suddenly I will know how to run the national grid. That is not what it's talking about. Or if I ask God for wisdom, suddenly I will know how to do my daughter's trigonometry homework. That's not exactly what he's talking about. Actually, I think, again, it's this same thing that we read about in Proverbs. Actually, if we ask God, we have started to do what Proverbs says and get wisdom. Does that make sense? That we have set our minds to start learning godly things rather than thinking that we have it all, that we know it all, or on the other hand, that we don't know anything. It's an attitude. Ask God for wisdom. That is the beginning of wisdom. Get wisdom. So yeah, we see it again here, don't we? This is how we get wisdom. But then what is it? What is wisdom? We know we have to get wisdom, but the Bible does give us some other clues as well. It's not just about knowing things. It's not just about knowing facts or trigonometry or how to run the national grid, but actually it's something else. Wisdom is the thing that gives us a firm foundation in life. I'm sure we all know the story about the man who built his house on the rock, don't we? He was called a wise man. And he was called a wise man not because he knew some great philosophies or that he was a great scientist or leader or politician, whatever it might be. He was a wise man because he built his house in the right place. And you'd think that would be quite a simple thing to do, wouldn't you? But no, lots of people building their houses on sand, aren't they? And the man's wisdom had rooted himself in something, he'd rooted himself in something so that when the storms of life came and battered on his house and shook everything up and everybody thought the end of the world had come, that when he was going through that storm, that he was able to stand rooted in his house because he had had the wisdom to build it on something solid. That he had a base on which he could persevere through the storms of life. And not only persevere, but I think flourish. We'll come to that a little bit later. That this is wisdom, that we have a basis on which to endure the batterings and the storms that life throws at us. It's interesting as well that wisdom is also creative in the Bible. Is that surprising to anyone? Wisdom is like a creative energy. And we read that in Proverbs chapter 3, 19 to 20. I don't know if that will magically appear on the screen. Oh, it's here already. Oh, wow, amazing. Even before I speak, creative wisdom coming this morning. And it says this: by wisdom, the Lord laid the earth's foundations. By understanding, he set the heavens in place, and by his knowledge, the watery depths were divided, and the clouds let drop the dew. I think this is a fascinating verse. It was God's wisdom that allowed him to create the universe. And it doesn't say his power or his love or his creativity or whatever else it might be. It actually says it's his wisdom, his understanding, brought forth the universe. And he just knew how to make clouds drop rain, and he knew how to make water flow over the earth, and he knew how to make land appear, and he was just wise. And out of his wisdom, he brought forth from a sort of storehouse, from a pool, he brought forth the universe from his wisdom. Now hold on to that thought, because the idea that wisdom is creative, I think, is really important. And we see the same thing with Bezalel. Now, there's a name you don't hear at every Sunday morning service. Anybody tell me who Bezalel is? Anybody remember? We've got your pastor in the back, so we could test.
Today.
Oh, not today. I'm sorry. Okay.
Bezalel.
Okay.
Okay.
Go on.
He comes up in Exodus, I think.
Yeah. Well done.
And he was used in the spirit to
yeah, you're doing well.
Can anybody help me?
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, yes, yeah. That's right. Exactly. So that's exactly right. Well, give them both a piece of cake. Very good, very good.
High five
for
you.
Yeah, you think a team name is next. So now it says, exactly right. So Bezalel was the guy in Exodus who God filled with wisdom and knowledge in order to make the things that God wanted for his temple. Now, God wanted his temple to be absolutely perfect, and he gave very clear instructions to Moses.
I thought
he
was the tabernacle.
The tabernacle.
Yeah.
Yes, you're quite right. Yes, I'm using the wrong word. It would have been very hard to carry a temple. thank you for the clarification. Yes, you're quite right. Making the tabernacle, and he was the guy who made it all look amazing. The guy who did all the embroidery and all the fancy artwork and all the goodness. And God filled this man with wisdom so that he could produce the things that God wanted for that point in time. So this man, in his wisdom, pulled something out of nothing, if you'll allow me to stretch the analogy, and created what God needed at that time in order for him to do his work, in order for him to dwell with his people. So Bezalel was filled with wisdom, and when God needed something, he could go to Bezalel and say, Bezalel, I need this decoration on the wall. And Bezalel was wise enough to bring that out of his wisdom store and make it happen. So wisdom is not just knowing things, but actually it's about, I'm going to say this, I've been thinking about this term, and my family have been looking at me funny all week when I try and explain it. Wisdom is the ability to produce something out of nothing at the time when God needs it.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound...
That is amazing.
Well, please, somebody has not thought I'm really weird for saying that. It gives me a bit of hope that I'm not losing the plot. That is good. That is a relief. And please, somebody. Wisdom is the ability to produce something out of nothing when God needs it. So let's look at that a little bit more. I said at the beginning we'd be looking at some parables regularly through the series. And one of those is the story of the 10 virgins. In Matthew 25, and again, I cannot remember, Rob, if I told you this verse. Matthew.
If you give it to me, I can find it.
Okay, Matthew 25, 1 to 13. I think it'd be probably worth reading it.
25,
1 to 13. Here we go. Yeah. Well done. Oh, well done. Look at that. What a good service. Well done. At that time, the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 were wise. The foolish ones took their lamps but did not take any oil with them. And the wise ones, however, took oil in jars along with their lamps. And the bridegroom was a long time in coming, and they all became drowsy and fell asleep. And at midnight the cry rang out, "Here's the bridegroom, come out to meet him." Then all the virgins woke up and trimmed their lamps. The foolish ones said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil, our lamps are going out." "No," they replied, "there may not be enough for both us and you. Instead, go to those who sell oil and buy some for yourselves." But while they were on their way to buy the oil, the bridegroom arrived. The virgins who were ready went in with him to the wedding banquet, and the door was shut. I'll leave it there, Rob. Thank you very much. So this is fascinating, isn't it? 5 of those virgins were wise. And the reason they were wise, again, not because they were intelligent, although they may well have been, the reason they were wise was because they had enough oil in their lamps. They had brought oil with them. And so when the bridegroom turns up, they've been waiting a very long time. Obviously, they're feeling tired and it's out of season. They're feeling probably grotty and bleary-eyed, whatever it might be. But Jesus turns up and they are able to produce what Jesus needs at that exact time. They are able to shine when Jesus turns up, and they are ready with the oil in their lamps. They are ready to shine. The wise ones have oil. And the ones who do not have oil, who have run dry, they are not able to shine. They are not able to do the job that they are there to do at that point in time. They are not wise because they are not able to pull from their store the thing which Jesus needs at that point in time. I think this is quite a key definition of wisdom in the Bible. And again, we actually, the more I thought about this definition, the more I saw it in everywhere in the Bible. We see it again in the parable of the talents, don't we? And the master gives money to each of his servants, and he says, "I'm going to come back." And when he comes back, 2 of them could say to the master, "Look what I've done with what you've given me. Here is an abundance. Here is what you came for. Look, take it. This is my offering." But one of them who was not wise, didn't do anything with that coin. He just buried it, didn't he? And when the master came back, all he could do was say, "Look, this is what you've given me. I'm afraid I haven't done anything with it." And I can imagine being in that room, the awkwardness of the look on Jesus' face. "I haven't done anything with what you have given me." And that is not wisdom. So wisdom is about taking what God has given us and producing a harvest for him, in whatever way that might be, because we have all been given different things. So we see it in the parable of the talents. And also, weirdly, we see it in the parable of the, it's not a parable, but the story of the fig tree as well, don't we? And we see that in Mark chapter 11. Jesus, I always feel very sorry for this fig tree in the Bible. I mean, Jesus seems a bit mean, doesn't he? It's out of season, figs are no longer being produced, but Jesus comes up to this fig tree and he doesn't find any figs. And he's so cross, he curses the fig tree. And you think, Jesus, do you not think that's a little bit unreasonable to expect figs to come from a fig tree out of season? But actually, it's not a story about figs. It's a story about wisdom. Now, we compare that to Psalm 1, the blessed man. And in Psalm 1, it talks about the man who is blessed as one who is planted by streams of living water and whose leaf does not wither and who produces its fruit in season. And when you compare the two, you see Jesus actually isn't really interested in figs. What he's interested in is our ability to produce fruit at the right time when Jesus needs it. It's not about everybody else. Every other fig tree in the country would not be producing figs at that time. But wisdom says that when Jesus needs figs, we are ready from our storehouse, from our well, we are ready to produce the things that Jesus needs. The man who is planted by streams of living water produces the fruit in the season that Jesus needs it. That is wisdom. Jesus is looking for a harvest, an abundance, not when everybody else is doing it, but when he turns up and says, I need this. And we are ready to flourish, ready to shine, ready to give up our figs, ready to say, Jesus, I have it. I am ready. I'm ready to do as you ask. Not in season, not in the natural, not when everything else is going well, but in the winter, when times are tough, when figs aren't growing, when Jesus comes to us and we say, yes, have it. I have it in abundance. Take it and use it however you want to. I think this is illustrated quite well in Proverbs chapter 20, verse 4. We got that one well. So this is quite a harsh passage, one which I always read in fear and trembling. It says, sluggards do not plough in season. So at harvest time, they look but find nothing. And that gives me great fear, doesn't it? You know, obviously, the illustration is about farming. You know, if you're a farmer, obviously you have to plough your fields at the right time and plant your seeds at the right time. Because otherwise, if you don't do all that, you get to harvest and you think, oh, I'm a little bit hungry now, I should go and make some bread. And you go out to your field and you realise there's nothing there because you forgot to, except weeds, because you forgot to plant all the seeds that you needed at the right time. Now, we should probably know that although this is useful advice for farmers, the Bible is primarily not a book about agriculture. So actually, it's telling us something a bit deeper than farming, isn't it? Actually, it's telling us that if we want to be wise, then we need to make sure that our fields are ploughed and that seeds are planted so that in the right season, when the time comes, we don't walk out and find that there is nothing to harvest. That is what the wise farmer does, that he keeps his field ploughed. He grabs up all the weeds and he chucks them out and he ploughs the field and he digs the wells in order to water the crops and he plants the seeds and he does all that farmers do. Excuse my utter ignorance of farming. I think that's about it. And at the right time, when the harvest comes, he is able to produce a harvest. Because like the blessed man, he is rooted in living streams. Amen. So we're going to wrap up soon because I want to leave some time for prayer. But again, this is illustrated beautifully by the story of Mary pouring out her perfume. I remember I said in the first session that this is one of my favourite stories in all of the Bible, and so I tend to include it in every one of my sermons. In John 12, 1-8, we read this.
I didn't give you this one.
In John 12, 1-8, if I had been prepared enough and wise enough to give Rob my verse. Oh, well done. We read this. 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany where Lazarus lived, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. And here a dinner was given in Jesus' honour. Martha served while Lazarus was among those reclining at the table with him. Then Mary took about a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume. She poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But listen to this. This is earthly wisdom. But one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, who was later to betray him, objected. Why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? It was worth a year's wages. He did not say this because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. And as keeper of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. Leave her alone, Jesus replied. It was intended that she should save this perfume for the day of my burial. You will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me. And I just think this is a wonderful, wonderful example of wisdom, of godly wisdom. And earthly wisdom says to us, no, hold back, hold on to that, because you need it to look after the poor. And actually it sounds very plausible, doesn't it? Because actually looking after the poor is a good thing to do. We are told to look after the poor. But it is not what Jesus was asking for in that season. It is not the fruit that he wanted to bring forth in that time. And so Mary, in her wisdom, in her godly wisdom, does not hold back to what the talent that Jesus has given her, but she pours forth an abundance at the right time when Jesus needs it. And she pours absolutely everything onto his feet. And our earthly brains go, what a waste of money that could be used for good. But that was the abundance that Jesus, that worship, that adoration, that pouring out of what she had in her storehouse. And when Jesus turned up, she could pour that out on his feet. That is wisdom in a nutshell. And so this is what I think wisdom is. It's to have a storehouse. Is to have a storehouse that is so rooted and full of living water that when winter comes, when the storms batter us, or when we're in the desert, or whatever the circumstances are around us, that when those things are going on, that when Jesus asks, when Jesus turns up and says, this is what I need you to do, we are able to pull out of our storehouses the exact fruit, the fig that Jesus needs, and say, Jesus, here it is. Here are my talents. Come and take them and offer them to Jesus in our worship, to pour forth, to pour out everything we have in our storehouses onto his feet. And just like those virgins, to shine brightly for him. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. So, and actually, what I would like to do this morning, I think there is time for a response. I feel like there might be people here who feel like they haven't got anything left in their storehouses. Perhaps there are people who are going through that storm that the wise man is going through, you know, battered by the wind and the waves and the or in the desert, and you feel like, actually, I haven't got anything left. And Jesus is turning up and he's asking for more, and you're worried, actually, I don't think I've got anything in my storehouse. And I just want to make that opportunity this morning to pray for you. Yeah, see, actually, God says it's not too late. The doors, like the virgins, the doors were shut. God says the doors are not shut. The shop is still open to come and get oil for that storehouse, to come and be filled with his living water. So I don't know how you normally do it, Christy. Do you normally have a time for prayer afterwards, or what? What would be a good way to do it? Thank you very much.